PS, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate, hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes.
Yes. Let the record show, we are both white people and have no sense of authority on
speak for yourself.
The culture.
I like to think of myself as tan.
You are peachy at best. I mean, let's be honest. I actually have Italian in my blood, so I'm like, I have olive skin, so.
I am very white. I'm Canadian and Swedish. So, I guess yeah. German as well.
Maybe you should sit this one out then.
No. The internet needs my...
your opinion.
Needs my thought. My voice Cowboy must Carter. Be heard regarding yeah. Cowboy Carter.
We are the end-all be-all of the discourse around this album and... Beyonce at large. So,
well, I'd also like to say that not only as a white person, but as a white person who has really never listened to country music, I really am very knowledgeable and I'm bringing a lot to this conversation.
Well, you know, I guess I am the diversity here then, because I had a country phase.
Oh.
So this was like coming home in a way. This was a rebirth for me personally.
I listened to Kacey Musgraves. Does that count?
That doesn't... I don't think that counts. Is she
also
even,
listening
like,
to Fearless doesn't count either, so...
I know. No, I was deep. Like, my sister was obsessed with country, and so I had this country phase, which was very, like... I was still into the pop girly side of it, like Faith Hill and Shania Twain. Carrie Underwood, obviously. Never had as much love for the Tim McGraws of it all, but I did like country for a while. And, you know... I feel like country is the best house cleaning music. I don't know the science behind this, but I feel like it's when I need to like do dishes or mop, I put on country music.
I'll say this. So I'm not like a big country person. I'm being tasked with covering the CMT Awards this weekend for work.
Wow.
which I'm like, okay, great. I'll have a lot to contribute here because I don't know who any of these people are. But I was like looking through the list of nominees. So many of the songs have types of alcohol in the title. And I'm like, this is like a very interesting genre of music where it's like, we got to have at least one track on every CD that includes whiskey.
Yes. Of course, 100%. I mean, right now she's probably out dancing. I think every great country song features alcohol, some form of a mini skirt or oversized white button up, and daddy issues. So,
okay.
I think those are the recipe, right there.
Well,
and. And, you know, I think you can add, I my blind spot is male country music and also recent country music. But those 2000s tracks, you also had a lot of dead kids. I don't know what it was, but people were singing about dead kids all the time.
Great.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. I am not an expert in country music. However, I feel like a fairly knowledgeable source on Beyonce and her career.
I don't know. I'm going to tell you about the CMT incident. So
that is true.
CMA's incident.
Whatever C something.
So.
But we're talking about Cowboy Carter, Beyonce's new album, Act Two of her trilogy that she's working on. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first Beyonce album we've covered on this.
That is
podcast.
Correct, yes.
Did we do an episode on like homecoming or something at some point? Maybe.
Maybe.
Or have I just talked about things enough? I mean, we did an episode on The Lion King, but that wasn't on her album
Dear
in
Lord.
Particular.
Ladies assemble.
And we never did an album, or we haven't done a birthday episode on Beyonce.
No. So, no, I think it's mostly come up in like love it or hate it or like pop culture-y moments. And I recognize that's a blind spot of my own creation. And you know, as a white woman, I can only learn and grow and atone for any harm done. I recognize that me saying like, oh, it's just not my type of music kind of...
It's racism.
It's not racism per se, but it does. There is a level of white privilege or sort of a white supremacy in my internalized feeling of not connecting to, but also recognizing that, you know, for many people, Beyonce's music speaks to a shared experience, the Black experience, and I have no skin in that game, clearly, and I wouldn't pretend to, but. I think this was an exciting album because there is so many cross sections with America at large. And so it was fun to listen to.
Yeah. I come to Beyonce as I come to a lot of my musical taste, which is that at a certain point when I was like 12, an older cousin called me up and said, oh, we like Beyonce. And I said, okay. And then have been liking her ever since.
Yeah.
So I think it was during the B-Day album rollout that I was turned on to Beyonce. I only really listened to like Christian radio growing up. So I missed the like Destiny's Child era, and I've gone back and I've listened to that, you know, at various points, but I'm not by any means like an expert there.
Yeah, exactly.
But basically like B-Day onward, I have been a member of the Beehive. I love all of her albums. I think they're all great. Including the Lion King album, which I think is underrated, I will say. I also think that she is a good actor occasionally, and have seen a lot of her movie stuff. She's great in Dreamgirls, obviously. And yeah, I guess I did not necessarily love the Carters album a ton with Jay-Z on there. I feel like that's
Jay-Z.
Probably my least favorite of the group, but we just sort of try to forget that that happened. Renaissance was incredible, but I would like to say, and I'm certain that I have said this on the podcast before, that back in, I was looking up the dates on this, back in 2021, Beyonce did a Harper's Bazaar cover and a whole article seemingly out of nowhere because it wasn't tied to anything that she was working on at the time or that was coming out. And the whole thing was like sort of Western themed. There was a lot of cowboy hats and things. And I remember saying, oh, I hope that we're getting the Beyonce country album because Daddy Lessons is such a good song off of Lemonade, I believe. And
I manifested that.
And I was like, oh, I think that there's a country album coming. And then she... you know, like a 8 months, whatever later, announces Renaissance, which is obviously not a country album, even though there is a horse on the cover. And some people, and I was like, ah, oh, like this is such a bummer that it's not this country album that I was really hoping for. But, you know, I guess she was like signaling sort of the horse and whatever elements of Renaissance. And that's why she was sort of like leading in with this country thing. However, fast forward to now, she releases Cowboy Carter, which is the country album, and turns out that that was initially supposed to be the first act of this trilogy, and that a lot of these songs were written and finished way back when, you know, 5 years ago, before the Harper's Bazaar cover, and that that was the intended plan, was to have the country album as the first of the trilogy. But because COVID sort of like kept everybody cooped up, she decided to switch the order and put Renaissance first and do like the club music because she felt like everybody needed, you know, to get out and party rather than have the country album.
Yeah, no, so I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I'm like, really? My mind was with Beyonce's mind.
Yeah.
Our minds were together. I just took a second for them to coalesce.
Yeah, yeah. No, you guys were on the same wavelength, and then powers out of your control made her have to switch. So,
right.
So really, you should take pride in how closely spiritually you are to Beyonce.
Yes. Yes. Well, obviously, we're basically obviously, the same person.
Yeah. This but no, is I thought the I thought the creation of this album was interesting, and it's pairing to Renaissance as like a sister album is also interesting, and it's clear like Beyoncé's always thought like she's always taken a very like detailed analytical approach to her music and how she releases it and whether it includes like the visuals or whatnot. She's always been playing with genre. She's always been speaking to the joys and traumas of the Black experience. And so I think Renaissance was interesting just because it was different than things she'd done before. And it seemed very, very, very focused on highlighting the sort of forgotten Black elements of, you know, club music and what's it called?
House music.
House music. And so I think that was interesting. And that's like part of why people were like, this isn't that good of an album, because it's like too many hands in the bucket, like too many hands in the kitchen. There's all these little like interludes and asides, and it's like, what's happening here? And like the songs, you know. But I think Cowboy Carter, obviously true fans knew what was going on with the Renaissance. I'm talking about the general population, okay? I know that the Beehive got it, and a lot of people got it and respected it. But I think Cowboy Carter does a good job of proving that Renaissance wasn't just like, oh, let's have a dance party with all our friends, but it was really intentional in who it included, how it was built as a sonically cohesive album, if you will. And Cowboy Carter just really follows that, and for whatever reason, intentional or not, probably makes it a little bit more accessible to your basic white girls, i.e. me.
Yeah, I think that, like, so this is Beyonce's eighth like studio album, and I feel like the first four of them are very much like, you know, you're kind of like R&B pop girl sort of like, there are messages there, but it's mostly just sort of like a collection of songs and less like thematic. And then I think somewhere between four and her self-titled album, she really started focusing on like the album as a whole and sort of like a message that she was going to push in the album and in the visuals and make these like more cohesive art pieces that really like spoke to something. And so in Beyoncé, it's a very feminist album, which I think was sort of groundbreaking in some ways at the time, even though like feminism as a concept now, it seems, you know, more like generalized after all of like the girl power, girl boss kind of things. But back in, when would that come out, 2013, it seemed very like novel. And then Lemonade is obviously sort of about the black culture and history and aesthetic, and there was the whole SNL skit about how like all the white people found out that Beyonce was black when Lemonade came out because she was like embracing that side of herself. That was really funny.
I don't remember that.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. It's like a post-apocalyptic sort of like thing, with, you know, like white people hiding under their desks and whatever. And it's like, no, we found out that Beyonce is black. Like, how could she do this to us? It's a very funny skit. And then you have Homecoming, where she's supporting the historically black colleges and universities, which was a very cool element, and the homecoming bands and dancers and everything. And then Renaissance obviously is doing that with house music. But I think the interesting thing about this trilogy is that, so like Renaissance comes out, it's act one, we don't know what act two is. And Beyonce sort of just like lets us sit in confusion for the entirety of act one, because people are like, is act two the concert? Is act two of the visual album that we haven't got? Is act two going to be the movie? Is there going to be an act two? Is act two another sort
the
of like house
along the way?
Yeah, it's like, what is this? Supposedly there was going to be three acts, but it was like, is there actually, or is this one of those things, you know, like with Mission Impossible, where they're like, oh, it's part one and part two, and then they're like, yeah, maybe it's not part two, it's just going to be another movie.
Yeah,
like it was very sort of confusing. And then during the Super Bowl, we get the announcement that Act Two is coming. At some point later on, we learn that it's Cowboy Carter. I guess we learned in the Super Bowl that it's a country album. Then we learned that it's called Cowboy Carter.
The two singles.
Yeah. And at that point, it sort of like came more clearly into focus. Oh, Beyonce is taking these genres that were historically created by Black artists and have been co-opted by white artists. And she's going back into the history and sort of like reclaiming these for this group of people who have been overlooked. And I just like, Beyonce is thinking so much and like so far ahead of where, like even as her fans, like she's, I don't know, she's just like doing things with so much more thought than you need to as a pop star. And the messages that she's pushing, I don't know, I just think are so powerful. And then not only that, but obviously then like the art and the music that comes are great, and we'll get into all of that, but I just think it's so interesting. And so now obviously she's done house music, she's done country music, now everybody's sort of like, okay, what is Act Three? A lot of people think it's going to be rock and roll, which I think would be a really cool aesthetic. Yeah. And I'm very excited to see how she merges all of those influences in with what she already has here. And yeah, it's,
well, and culturally, it's interesting just to think of like the history of music at large. And like, you know, there were eras where country then beget rock and roll. And like rock and roll happened at a time of civil unrest and like tension. And, you know, the Vietnam War and all of this was the soundtrack to so many of these anti-establishment rock and roll bands that came out of it. And to then mirror that to where we are now and history sort of repeating itself and the people getting sick of it and all of that, it makes sense that there would be this sort of like journey through history that parallels today and how country and rock and house music all sort of encapsulates those different avenues of music as part of the zeitgeist.
Well, also she does have one rock song that's on Lemonade, Don't Hurt Yourself, and that's the same album that Daddy Lessons is on. So it's interesting that she was kind of like she did these like little experiments with these sounds that I think went over really well, and then now she's coming back to them. That's if the third album is, if Act Three is a rock album, which I sort of think it is, because I'm sort of like, what else, like what other could genre be, could it be?
Kids album,
you could know, be could be polka,
a Weird Al, you know, satire album,
could be stand-up comedy. It's a comedy.
Opera. She's an opera singer now.
That is true.
There's some opera happening.
That is true.
But yeah, no, it's exciting to think of that. And just like talking about Beyonce as an artist, like I think it's interesting to think of what has sort of forced her hand to like choose what she does, because, you know, the comparison's always there, not necessarily because they're competitors, but more peers. That like Taylor Swift being so driven by awards and in streams and like clearly like hyper focused on her individualism and needing to own things and write things by herself and only work with certain people. And there's this real sort of like, yeah, just the individualism that's like hyper focused on in American culture and Western culture especially. Whereas you see someone like Beyonce who is blocked out of those, you know, metrics. She doesn't get the same opportunities or recognition. And so can't base her like career off of like getting the hit singles or whatever. Not that she hasn't had those, but just that the industry at large has, you know, historically ignored her and other people of color. And so her motivation just seems less about how do I get my next hit and more, well, I like making music. I'm not going to get like X, Y, or Z for this, but like, how do I make it like passionate and fulfilling for me? And that turned out to be this sort of community perspective, at least how it appears with this, like, you know, she's including Black country artists in this album. She's continuing to work with people who are underrepresented in the industry. And I think that's what helps make it feel so collaborative, is because it is. And that's rare especially in white artists of today.
Yeah, she does. I do think that Beyoncé is an artist in a way that a lot of other musicians are not. Like, she is focused on, I think, like, the quality and the message of things more than she is necessarily on their success. I mean, she has, like, when she said somewhere at some point about Lemonade, like, if I had been concerned about, you know, numbers and sales or whatever, I would have put it on Spotify. Instead, I had it on Tidal for 3 years before it ever went on Spotify. It's like, she's not necessarily, I feel like, concerned about the same types of things. And yeah, she has kind of gone out of her way to support a lot of up and coming designers, like a lot of the designers who designed things on her tours, and, you know, look she wears in general are like up and coming Black designers. Like whenever she does like photo shoots and stuff, lots of times she'll have Black photographers and Black artists involved in those rather than, you know, the big top tier like people who generally do those kinds of shoots. So she is really, I think, taking a stand on a lot of that and going out of her way to support that community and support, you know, those dancers and designers and things who she wants to be the next generation to follow behind her. So yeah, it's always fun to see. And she just puts so much thought into everything she does that it's fun for me to kind of like look through and find all of those like references and influences, which I guess in some ways is similar to Taylor Swift's kind of like Easter eggs. But with Beyonce, it's more of like a historic kind of I don't know. It feels like with Taylor Swift, it feels like you're sort of looking for Easter eggs from Taylor Swift's life. Yeah. Where with Beyonce, she's not often, I think, pulling stuff from her own life, really. A lot of times,
I think she is, but that's like the least interesting part.
Yes.
Of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, there's always like the Jay-Z stuff, and you know, she's like,
yeah,
obviously,
she, like,
there's songs on this album about
this,
Blue,
like,
Ivy and whatnot.
In this and,
yeah.
So there are like the fun, juicy little, ooh, is this about, you know, Becky with the good hair or whatever? But it is more, the sonic Easter eggs are more like the samplings and these interpolations and who she has, you know, playing the, I don't even know, the banjo and the
accordion. Oh, yeah, like Stevie Wonder did the harmonica and the, yeah, that kind of thing.
And it's interesting, she released, or her company released like a letter about this and like was talking about how her influence was like Western, old Westerns, and how she would like play them while she was in the studio and like how she wanted to explore the different elements of the genre. So you have basically like three parts on the album that play like you're flipping through radio stations, you know, and settling on what sounds good to you in the moment. And so it is like, it's a fun album to listen to all the way through because it's so gorgeously like edited together that it all just flows. And literally the last song plays seamlessly back into the first song, creating this sort of circle you can sit in and appreciate, instead of having like a bunch of singles or like favorite things that stick out and filler music. Like, it all lends itself to absorbing it as a whole.
Yeah, because I stayed up till midnight to listen to it when it came out, and despite, you know, supposed to be going to bed early, I was like, I can stay up late one of these days.
You're like, doctor, it's Beyonce. This will
right,
cure me.
I was like, Beyonce is medicine. She will cure me. And I was just, because Kacey Musgraves' new album came out a couple of weeks ago, which I listened to and also really enjoyed, but I sort of felt like with that album, there was some good, I liked it. There are some really great songs at the beginning. There's some really great songs at the end. I felt like there's a sort of a period in the middle where it's like there's too many songs. She should have chopped some, and it all kind of like begins to meld together a bit. And that's obviously something that I've said about Taylor Swift's albums in the past that we've covered, where it's like, okay, there's 18 songs here. Do we need all of these? Like, are all of these singular and different enough from each other on this album? Like, or could we have trimmed a couple of them? And so when I saw the Beyonce, you know, set list here with 27 tracks. I mean, granted, some of them are like interludes or whatever.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was an hour and 20 minutes long, I was like, huh, this feels like I might be biting my tongue in and have to kind of say the same thing about Beyonce that I've said about other people. It's like, okay, we could have used an edit here. Like, this is too long. But I was like blown away by how well constructed this album is and how it flows, in that it never gets dull. Like, just when you think that she's sort of moved in one direction, she spins around and goes in another direction, but it all like somehow fits together and like it's a smooth ride, even though they're different types of music at various points. I think she sort of starts in like more traditional country and then moves into a newer version of country and then sort of moves into her own kind of version of country is how I've seen people talk about this album. But the way she uses the interstitials, I think, like works really well with the transitions. And she, you know, will be like singing opera on one track and then rapping on the next one and then move into a Willie Nelson thing. And still, it somehow all feels cohesive. Yeah. And I don't like, there are definitely songs on this album, obviously, as with any album, that I like more than others, but I don't feel like there's a section or a song or anything here where I'm like, oh, that feels like sort of useless, like we could get rid of it. Yeah. Like, I think everything on this album feels like it has a purpose to it.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting because she said that she wrote over 100 different songs for this album and then like narrowed it down to this, which I'm just like, this woman is a machine. Like, it's crazy that she had
no other worries in her life. So
yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. But it's like, she's just like, that's so much. And the amount of, I like, I guess, you know, she wrote 100 songs, like how much and like how much of
wasn't like fully formed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like these, you can definitely tell that she's gone over it like and really done the most with everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like mind-boggling. And I got to the end of it and I was like, this is like a masterclass album. It's so good. Like, I love Beyonce. I feel like this is one of her best albums, like objectively. It's just absolutely incredible. I mean, I loved Renaissance so much, and I feel like this is on par with that. And like, yeah, it's hard for me to say better things, because I think Renaissance is more of like just my vibe of an album. Right. And it's also speaking more to like my community in some ways. But I love Cowboy Carter so much. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to it nonstop since it came out. And even in that time period, I'm like, I feel like I've just discovered like more and more and more songs that I love off of it.
Ugh. Well, that's what stands out to me is like, you know, I usually like listen to an album and be like, oh yeah, this song's good. Oh yeah, this song. No, not this one. But there's something about this album that makes it hard to like even start in the middle. Like, you kind of just want to get on the bandwagon, so to speak, at the beginning and just ride through the whole thing, because it's just, there's something that scratches my brain with how each song bleeds into the next. And at first, I do not like like a little, what are they called? Like an interlude. Like, Ariana Grande did it on some albums. And I'm like, this is annoying to me. I don't understand. Like, just give me songs or don't. But I like how these add to the story. And it honestly made me think of like, you know, again, I don't want to keep bringing her up, but the Taylor Swift thing where she's like, oh, I wanted 1989 to be sonically cohesive. Like, oh, like sonically cohesive. And it's like, to so many artists, sonically cohesive just means like, you know, the songs sound good together and there's maybe a nice flow to upbeats and downbeats. But this was like a masterclass in literal sonic cohesion, because you just want to go along like for the whole journey, the whole hour and a half. And I think that's unique. And especially as someone who hasn't always gravitated towards Beyonce's music, I think it is kind of fulfilling and maybe humbling in a way to like see like, okay, why is this, you know, stereotypically white genre doing it for me in a way that the R&B, you know, stereotypically black genres haven't done for me in the past? And that's something I'm sitting with and working through. But I do like that this one is like, damn, like everything works together and you just don't see that level of attention in the era of like TikTok sounds and singles and, you know, chart chasing and all of that.
I mean, I do think that there are just like certain types of music and like music is so subjective that there's just some things that some people like better than others.
For sure.
But I also like, I wonder if some of the difference here is like how the album is put together, because clearly like Beyonce came up with an idea for this trilogy of albums and then sort of set to work coming up with the influences and writing the songs or whatever. It's not like she just happened to write a bunch of country songs and then decided to put them together. And I think a lot of musicians, it's less about like, okay, this is the album I want, now let me make songs for it, and more of like, oh, I'm just like constantly writing music and then sort of have to go back through the last 5 years of songs I wrote and pick 12 of them and somehow put them together on an album, which is like, if you're looking for like sonically cohesive, I think if you have sort of like an end goal or like a starting point to work off of, you, that makes that much easier than if you're just sort of culling from things and trying to put an like an outfit together based on stuff you've already got. But yeah, do you think that listening, like, or maybe this is a question sort of like more for the end of the podcast, but like, do you feel like having listened to this and enjoy it, do you think that you're more likely to now go back and listen to her previous albums?
I mean, don't put me on the spot. It's hard for me. Like I said, I'm like, I am curious now, like if I've just been resistant for whatever reason. But I think this touches a very specific part of me that I've already enjoyed, which is country music. And I think part of the fun is seeing how she plays with that genre, because it is a genre that I've seen be dominated mostly by men, also by white women, very like, you know, middle aged, like you said, alcohol, parties, unfaithful boyfriends and whatnot. And so there is a part of it that's just fun to see this modern twist on it with someone who's also just a very good singer. And so just enjoyed like the vocals almost in a way.
She's just like such, she's so talented. She's just like the most talented person ever. Like, I can't even imagine what it would be like to have such abilities. It's like, she's such a good dancer. She's such a good singer. And then on top of that, her mind is also such an incredible feat in her taste level, how she's putting things together, like how she's seeing things and building things and constructing these concepts. It's just like, wow, to have that many skill sets like shoved into one human being is just like beyond remarkable. Yeah.
It's too bad that she's used that power for we'll get into it. It's fine. Yeah. No, generally speaking, Beyonce's very talented and this album proves that in a lot of different ways, I'd say.
Yeah, I'm supposedly this Friday she's supposed to release her like the next tour or whatever that she's like, I don't know if that's the case. And I'm also a little bit like, the Renaissance tour was so incredible, and I kind of can't imagine her touring this album in the same way, like, because it's much more intimate and smaller in scope, and so I think it would be kind of like a little bit underwhelming to see her in this like same arena playing, you know, this kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, so and I was going to say, it's like hard to, because obviously this is 1 hour, so she'd have to mix in her other stuff. But then it's like, does that do away with the sort of integrity of this storytelling? And also, if you're just repeating your highlights again a year after your last, you know, tour, it feels sort of repetitive if even 30% of the, you know, set list is the same.
Well, the nice thing about the Renaissance tour, and I think that like she obviously knew this was coming, so I assume that she like had a plan for all of this well in advance, but like for Renaissance she basically played Renaissance the entire way through, but she added sort of like a prelude to it which was mostly like slower songs. And then she put songs that sort of fit with the Renaissance vibe from her earlier albums, like in the middle of the Renaissance songs, even though she played those all in order. And they weren't necessarily like her biggest hits. Like lots of her hit songs were not there. They were like, she selected the songs purely based on like, did they fit within the Renaissance vibe? So I think that if she did this, she would probably do something similar where she would go back through her catalog and pick things that would fit within this genre. However, she only has one other country song. So I think she'd have to like rework stuff into kind of like a country vein, which I do think would be really interesting. Like, I think that she could probably put together, you know, a 2.5 hour show with that's mostly this, and then, you know, has like Daddy Lessons and like maybe a country version of
Crazy
Love. You know, like Halo or something, you know, not Halo, dear Lord, but
no,
like, but like, honestly, if she did like a country sort of version of Partition or something, I feel like that'd be like really cool
to play with.
Yeah. So I could definitely see her doing something like that, but I'm kind of wondering if she might go the route of like a residency somewhere, because that feels like then it could be smaller and would also be so different that it wouldn't be like comparable, really. My other thought was maybe she'll just do something more like Homecoming, where she'll do like a couple very specific shows someplace and then just videotape that and put it out later as a film version, because I also kind of think like Beyonce has three kids, like, and the scope of the Renaissance tour was so massive. It's like, does she want to do that again? I don't know. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's like, this is all speculation.
Artists make their money, but it's like, she already has enough, you know?
Right. And it's like, she just launched the hair care line, which, I mean, that's like a whole nother thing, whatever. But like, I don't know if she wants to spend more time focused on that.
We're working 9 to 5 for, what is it? We're working overtime and a half for half the pay. Is that it?
Yeah.
That's her vibe.
Exactly.
Lived experience. Yeah.
But yeah, okay. So anything else like about the album as a whole or generally before we get into the tracks?
No, I'd love to get in the tracks.
Okay. Well, we start with American Requiem.
Yeah, very cool.
Which I loved. I'm like, this, when I was listening to this, I was like, this is an opening track. Yeah. Like, this is incredible. It's so like rich and like big and grand and feels very much like Welcome to the Wild West in a way. You definitely get like the cinematic energy of it here. And also she's sort of saying like, like, you think America's great, but it's screwed up in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of people who have been deified who shouldn't, and a lot of people who have done a lot of work behind the scenes who haven't gotten any credit. And we are going to change that, hopefully.
Well, and this like plays into, you know, my favorite brand of sort of petty superstar. I think a lot of people have issues when like celebrities try to pretend that their lives have been hard or whatever. I think Beyonce gets a better pass than someone like Taylor Swift. But I like that there's this like pettiness to sort of, you know, alluding to the CMA scene and talking about not getting awards. And it's like, I like that. I like when a celebrity is like self-aware and like admitting that they care about, you know, these things that are unrelatable to us common folk. And I think that's stronger than someone who's like trying to pretend that they're, you know, like that Bo Burnham country song where it's like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely poor like you guys, too, you know?
Oh, yeah. The pandering one.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a cool opening. And it has that sort of the sort of religious sweeping, you know, organ playing, lots of low notes that just capture that sort of spaghetti Western weird headed west on this journey that's bigger than us type thing. So I think it sets the stage well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like, we'll get to it at the end, but like Amen, the final song on the album, is sort of like a version of this that then comes back in, which is nice. So it's a nice like bookend to the full adventure that we're going to go on.
Yeah.
Then the second track is Blackbird, which is the Beatles song that is a cover. And this is interesting because Beyoncé doesn't really do covers usually. And there's a couple of them on this album, or sort of like versions, I guess, of covers. So I thought that was sort of a fascinating choice to have this. It's like beautifully sung. And she has four young Black country singers who are on it. I guess this was sort of like a racial reconciliation song when the Beatles wrote
it. Paul McCartney wrote it about the civil rights movement that they were witnessing from over the pond happen in the US in the 60s.
Which is interesting. I didn't really know that. I mean, like, I obviously knew this song, but I am not like a Beatles fan, so I think I knew it via like somebody sang it on American Idol at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's overplayed. But but I think it's sort of this healing take. Like, I think that's what's interesting about the album is country has pushed out Black artists, and like country has become very white, very like conservative, very MAGA driven. And so for her to take this song back and highlight artists who are sort of undervalued in their chosen genre is doubly interesting and kind of elevates the moment.
It's also cool, I think, that it's like her and then these four women, and you know, there was four Beatles, and that kind of symbolism as well, I liked.
Yeah, that's cute.
Then track number three is 16 Carriages, which was one of the two tracks that she released during the Super Bowl. So this one's been floating around for longer. So I feel like I have just not been skipping it, but like have been less focused on it because I've been playing it constantly for a month already, or 2 months, however long it's been out. But this is an interesting one because it's sort of about her upbringing and being like on the road and running around touring, and how in some ways that was great, but also she sort of like lost her childhood and it was tough. And then doing that same thing to her kids. It's very beautiful.
Yeah. It's honestly, I feel like so often artists don't necessarily lead with their best or most interesting tracks. And I do feel like 16 Carriages and Texas Hold'em are some of my favorites still. Which, not because the other ones are bad, but just because I think there's something so kind of compelling about the intimacy of 16 Carriages, and then Texas Hold'em is just a a total blast.
Well, also, I think they do a really good job. They're both from the first section of the album, which is like the more old school country, but they do such a good job of kind of like setting up what the vibe is for the era, if you will. And then there's other songs in the album that I think I'd like better than those two, but they are two of like the most country-ish then she sort of like plays with as we get further on into the album.
Yeah. And this whole section is like very personal, which I think is interesting because their next song is Protector, which literally features her child and is this sweet little lullaby, woe-woe-bye.
Yeah, I love Protector. It's I thought this was gorgeous.
I know.
Absolutely stunning. Like, oh, and you know Beyoncé loves to try to get her kids Grammys.
Yeah.
She's like, give Rumi a Grammy.
Yeah. Yeah, the feature is very important. So I support this.
I'm like, Blue, I think, has several at this point. So we might as well. But she's not on this album.
You know?
So, yeah. Well, I also really liked in Protector how like, I am not a parent, obviously, but I was sort of thinking about you while I was listening to this at various points of, like, she's talking about how you, like, want to protect your kid, but then you also, like, can't, like, you have to let them sort of, like, grow on their own and be their own person, and sort of how do you do that, and the, just, like, how fraught being a parent is in that regard. And I was like, oh, yeah, like,
yeah,
must be
sweet.
Difficult.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorites.
Then we sort of have the first sort of interstitially song, which is My Rose, which is less than a minute long. And then that sort of like fades out. And then we get into the smoke hour with Willie Nelson, which is where we get the first of these like sort of radio kind of like
interludes,
DJ. Yeah, like we're changing the channel kind of a vibe. And I thought it was interesting that, so on Renaissance, there's obviously lots of influences and there's other people who pop up. They're almost all, or I think they're all Black artists. And in this, I kind of expected it to be similar where she was going to only use other Black musicians. And instead, it's like we have Willie Nelson, we have Dolly Parton. Later on, you get Miley Cyrus and Post Malone. Obviously, there's like the Beatles aren't on this, but it's the Beatles cover, which I thought was an interesting kind of choice. But I do think it makes sense with sort of like this, like a in some ways, like taking things that like white people have taken from Black people. So then she's like taking back from the white people in some regards. And then also I think it does show a kind of like we all can be working together. Like there can be sort of like a melding within this genre of these old guard people who are not here because for like this segregationist vibe that we've got going today, that Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson are these people who are like, yeah, like bring everybody to the table. Like we like everyone, we want good music. And so I thought that it was really, it's sort of powerful that she has these two like old stalwarts who are kind of saying like, yeah, like we support this, like everybody else get in line, get on board. Like this is what country music should be.
Well, I think it's also like, on a very practical level, like she talks a lot about how she grew up on country music and especially the Houston Rodeo, which was such a big deal, which was all these country stars like coming and performing and you have the big, you know, rodeo element. And so there's probably a nostalgia piece to it. But I do think this is where the criticism sort of starts to come in, is this idea that she's like cosplaying America, like, you know, the wanting to, I don't know. I think the criticism is sort of murky. And obviously everyone's entitled to their own reaction to the art. I know there was some hesitancy with the cover art featuring the American flag and like this sort of blonde Beyonce and having the Jolene and the Dolly Parton and the Willie Nelson being like wanting that white approval almost. I don't know if that's her intention. I just think, it's kind of, it's difficult when you are like trying so many things and obviously a lot of it's still open to interpretation. And like, I don't know, Willie Nelson's such a figure that it makes sense, but then you're also like, okay, well, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I don't really get the sense. Like, I guess there is sort of like the petty element here of the, like with the CMA performance and sort of like how people don't necessarily accept her in that realm. And she says on one of the songs about how like first she was too country, then she wasn't country enough. But I don't get the sense that this is an album that that she has them on this album to sort of like be trying to woo like the white country audience.
Right.
I don't think that she really cares too much to if they like it or if they're listening or not, aside from the sort of like, you said that I couldn't do this, well, like watch me make a better country album than you ever could sort of vibe that she has.
Yeah, well, and this sort of kicks off this like very,
like, I don't think she's like, I hope Jason Aldean likes this album, better put Willie Nelson on here.
I think the idea is more that there's this general like, yeah, I guess I don't know how to phrase it, but I think it's more less about the specifics of white people liking her and more her thinking success would look like, you know, doing your country routine with your blonde hair and your cowboy boots type thing. But but no, this is one of my favorite sections of the album because it has some of the pop stuff and kind of she's playing around with stuff. This is where you get Texas Hold'em and then Bodyguard, which is a bop and a half.
Oh, I love Bodyguard. She's going to protect me in the mosh pit. Oh my gosh, please.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun.
And as a little girl who needs protecting, I'm like, yes, please, yeah, Beyonce. You're like, take care of me. Then we get, I feel like, what is maybe the most controversial song on the album, which is the Jolene cover. Well, there's an intro from Dolly Parton, and then we get into the Jolene cover.
With the good hair.
Yeah. Where she has, like, reworked. I obviously know Jolene. Like, it's a song everybody knows. I don't, it's not, like, a favorite of mine. So when I saw that she was covering it, I was like, oh, great. Like, another version of this. I still, it's still, like, not my favorite thing on this album. But she reworks it, because I guess in the original version of Jolene, Dolly Parton is sort of, like, begging Jolene not to take, not to take the husband or boyfriend or whoever it is. And then in this song, Beyonce's like, good luck trying to do this. Like, I will beat you. And people are like, oh, like the original version of Jolene works because it's so tender, and now you're like making it aggressive and it's not the same song and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like the sort of like the original version of Jolene was written in a time period where like the strong woman figure was like not as acceptable, and I like it does not make sense for Beyonce to be singing those lyrics like that. It just, like, if she was gonna do this song, I feel like she had to rework it in the way that she did. I mean, like, I don't necessarily know if we needed Jolene on this album. Like, if I was to get rid of something, it would probably be this. But
I mean, I think my bigger issue is just this like sentiment of going after the other woman instead of like looking at your man, which I think is true in both versions of Jolene, and sort of like why I'm like, whatever. I did read a theory that this is about Tina. This is Tina's perspective on Beyonce's dad, and how, because at one time she says, "I'm still that Creole bitch from Louisiana" or whatever, and I thought that was interesting to kind of explore her different family's perspective, because then right after this, she goes into daughter, which is how she describes how she doesn't handle it like her mom does. You know what I mean?
How she's like her father's daughter.
Yeah.
It's sort of like daughter is kind of like the follow up to daddy lessons.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's sort of interesting. I do feel like I was annoyed by Jolene, but mostly just from a feminist POV, where I'm like, guys, stop ragging on Jolene, especially because the first song, it's not even that she's cheating with her husband, it's that she's like a bank teller at the freaking bank that this guy can't stop like going to visit, and it's like, that's not on her. You guys need to take care of your at-home dynamic, okay, before bringing Jolene's name into this. But whatever.
Yeah. There's definitely an impulse that Beyonce had working on this album that's like, okay, I need to like integrate old like country staples, you know what I mean? And I get it, but I also don't necessarily think that that is like the strongest parts of this album. Although she beautifully sung.
Yes.
And
yeah, of course.
And I do like this version of Jolene.
Yeah.
And she does a nice job sort of putting it together. I did really like Daughter. I think that's a gorgeous song. And this is also where she does the opera. Italian opera in the back half, which is remarkable. It's like, wow.
You're like, whoa.
Like, let me just stop for a second and remind you exactly how talented I am. If you thought I was only sort of talented, I can also sing opera better than everyone else.
Yeah.
Wow, the talent that she's got here. And then we go into Spaghetti, which is the rap song on the album.
Yeah.
And we also get like an intro from Linda Martell here, who comes back later. And she's like an old school black country singer and sort of one of the...
She's talking about genres and like...
Yeah.
How they're funny little things. And so it kind of allows her to pivot into this more... I don't know, like rap or hip hop adjacent country.
Yeah, because I guess up until this point, it's all been pretty straight country music. I mean, this is like, yeah. We have the two different covers. We've had like Texas Hold'em, 16 Carriages. Yeah, and then with Spaghetti, we sort of make a pivot into the back half of the album, which is more, we're switching things up a bit.
Alligator Tears, I want to know what it's about. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I really like it. I've listened to it a lot, but I was also going through the lyrics and I was sort of like, huh.
You're like, wait, are these good? I don't understand. Because are we sad also, we're not going to church anymore? Like, I don't know.
Well, and it's like crocodile tears are like fake, but I'm like, I don't know what exactly an alligator tear is and how that relates.
Yeah, so we need Beyonce to come out with an explanation on that.
Yeah, so wasn't exactly sure what was going on there, but I love the song, so that's nice. And then we get Smoke Hour 2, which is like the second Willie Nelson sort of jump in. And then this is where I think is the best part of the album. Or my favorite section is this next like group of three songs.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
So first we get Just for Fun, which is my favorite song on the entire album.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Is it because I have cancer and this is sort of about like, we just got to get through this. Like it's
wait,
a rough
sing a part
go.
For me. I can't picture it.
I am not. It's like slower.
Okay. I'll revisit it.
Yeah. It's I love it, but I do feel like it really speaks to me in this current moment.
Yeah.
So would it sort of be resonating with me in the same way if I was not? I don't know. It's about like we need to get through it or just get used to it. I really love it. And then that moves into the two most wanted. Well, also I feel like we need to address the fact that because this is act two, at various points in the track list, she has, like, there are things with I's or L's that she has put two of instead of
all
one.
I's. It's just anytime there's an I, she does two.
Oh, yeah. I guess Alligator has two L's normally. Yeah, two I's. So, but it's not all the times where there are two I's, but there's a lot of times where there are, it's
any
not all
the
I's,
tracks,
but.
Any of the song tracks that have an I, it's a double I for two, the
yes
Roman numeral. I guess the only one to not is Louisiana, but that's an interlude.
But then part of me is like, but some of them the two I's are just like I's, and then some of them they stand, it's a Roman numeral for two.
Yeah,
like two most wanted.
Well,
and two hands
number,
to heaven.
Well,
right, exactly. But I'm just saying, like, there's twos and I's. There's a lot of going on here with it, which I like, which I think is clever and I do like because I was like, oh, wait, I like this is a vibe. But then I was sort of like, okay, when we get to act three, are there just going to be groups of three I's in these song tracks or is that just maybe something we're doing here?
Maybe. Who knows?
So interesting. Or like all the E's are going to be threes.
Oh,
you know,
that's
it's
a
like Megan.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But Two Most Wanted is the Miley Cyrus song. Gorgeous. And this is sort of like the, one of my friends said, oh, this is going to be the first dance song that lots of people have for the next couple of years, which I could see.
Yeah, no, it's very gay. I thought it was very beautiful. I'm like, this is about lesbians and I'm happy for them. I'm happy they have this. I'm happy that Miley and Beyonce got to cosplay that, you know, better than freaking Jay-Z.
I also was reading about their voices and how when they sing the harmonies, I guess they keep switching back and forth between who sings the alto and who sings the soprano, which like I'm not a musical person, so I would never have known that. But when I was listening to it afterwards, it does, and you sort of like follow them, it is like they kind of keep switching back and forth where like they'll kind of swap who takes the melody and like who's singing the higher part. Which again, I think speaks to
a very beautiful pairing of voices.
And I guess I read online that this was like a late that Miley Cyrus was like a late addition to the album. That she wasn't, that it was the Grammy night that they spoke about it, and that's all happened since. Which I'm like, I don't know if I can possibly believe that.
I mean, people do fast turnarounds like that, but that is, I mean, did Miley say that? I feel like. Is that just a rumor? I saw a tweet that was like, oh my gosh, Beyonce and invited Miley Cyrus to do this after Liam left her and took her horse Blue Jay, and that's who's on the cover of the album.
Well, I also saw that.
That's
like
a lie. That's a fake.
That it was her horse on the cover, which I was like, huh, interesting. But then also, there's all of this speculation on whether or not the album was originally supposed to be called Beyonce. Because there's a whole... So she released the album cover that is current, the one that actually is, the Cowboy Carter one, where she's on the horse with the American flag and the sash. But then afterwards, she released one that's sort of like a Statue of Liberty kind of esque thing, where she's wearing a sash that says Act Two Beyonce, which I guess was Knowles's maiden name. Yeah. But then when she named Beyonce, she was trying to give her maiden name, but they misspelled it on the birth certificate. So that's why it's Beyonce and not Beyonce.
Yeah.
And I guess when people ordered the vinyl or whatever, or the CD, it like all of them came as that version, and it doesn't have all of the songs on it. Ooh. And has different artwork, and on like the spine and stuff it says Beyonce and it doesn't say Cowboy Carter anywhere. So now there's this online speculation that the album was originally called Beyonce and was slightly different, and then at the last minute Beyonce like changed the album artwork and added a couple of songs to the track listing.
Wait,
and
so
that's why
what songs were missing? Now I'm so curious. What? So no one's gotten a CD that has the Cowboy Carter art?
I guess the original, like, the first round of them, no. Yeah. I did not, like, all of this is, like, I was trying to find an article about this, and I couldn't. It was all, like, people making comments on Twitter and stuff, and TikToks that I saw, and I was like, I don't know how much of this is actually true. But
and you didn't verify, but you wanted to share the...
Well,
rumors,
because I'm asking, maybe our fans can help me, because looking for actual evidence of this online, and nobody seemed to have anything.
No, that's very interesting. That's very, I love a good.
I mean, we report on stuff
conspiracy
regarding Taylor Swift all the time that has no, that's all circumstantial evidence.
I know, I'm just saying it's funny that it's like, I'm saying it's funny that you're like, well, this is, might be a lie, but. Might not be.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying it could be. I'm here to give off the evidence.
I want to know. I would love for that to be true, just to
get the Swifties on it.
I mean, that just seems like someone just got a freaking, you know, golden ticket. Like, preserve that in its plastic wrapping, because that'll probably be worth something depending on how many were sent out like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. So I didn't really even think about that aspect of it, but yeah.
Talk about a collectible.
Talk about a collectible.
My one of my favorite tracks is the next one, which is the Post Malone Levi's Jeans. Very cool.
Such a good song.
Cool. Such a vibe. Such a, you want to just be in your car with the windows down and you just want to be like, yes, I love
it. And who knew Posty could really pull this out in the way that he did?
Well, that's why I like that she chose Miley Cyrus and Post Malone, because I think they were people who were sort of pigeonholed early in their careers for Miley as a child star. But then they've been playing with genres ever since to varying degrees of success. I mean, I think Miley Cyrus still should probably apologize for that. What even was that era?
The like, Bangers?
Yeah.
No, Bangers was the best era.
But it's weird that she adopted, Wrecking she co-opted Ball? So much like Black culture and was like, I'm this edgy queen, and then immediately went to like long-haired country starlet again.
I guess, but I feel like, but I feel like that was the best. I feel like, I mean, I really, I guess I do really like Flower. What is that? The is Flowers the name of the album? That album is also good, her most recent one.
Yeah,
but I feel like the Bangers is her best album. Like Can't Be or no, Can't Be Tamed was before that. Anywho,
Can't Be Tamed was
what's the song? we can't stop.
Yeah,
yes, that's the song. I love
lines,
that song.
And like when she was hosting and she like called out Nicki Minaj, like just that whole era is just so like cringe. Which
no,
I...
Nicki Minaj called out her. Oh, what's right. Good, Miley. What's good? Never forget.
Yeah.
No, but Levi Jeans is great.
Yeah.
Then we have Flamenco.
This was just fine.
Yeah, which is not necessarily my favorite.
I couldn't tell you a thing about this actually.
And it's also short. It's only in a minute and 40 seconds. Oh, so it's okay. Kind of like, it's sort of like a switch out from the, you know, that sort of like last group of songs. And then we get another interstitial, the Linda Martell show, where she's sort of again talking about genre and how all of the, you know, this next song is going to be a mix of a bunch of genres. And then we get Yaya, which is also one of my favorite songs in the album.
This is
a bop.
It's so good. I mean, it's so, because this is a mix of everything I grew up listening to. I mean, it literally like samples the Beach Boys. And I think the vibe here is so much fun. And it has this like live audience sort of gimmick that works really well. And Beyonce's having so much fun vocally. Like she's like growling and she's doing like a little Beyonce, you know, like a little squeak here and there. I do think it's one of those places where it's like, all of us have to draw the line on how much we care about these celebrities, because Beyonce can sing about her anti-capitalism all she wants, but she's still a billionaire who has many of people working probably overtime to get her Ivy Park and her hair care line out there, like, you know, not caring about where her Tiffany diamonds are coming from. So there's a level of dramatic irony happening here that I think I understand the criticism. I've just had to separate my hope for celebrities to do better and to just accept what I want from them, which is a good time.
Yes.
So that's where I am with this song.
Yeah. And also, I do feel like celebrities are not necessarily graded on a different scale necessarily, but it's like, if you're this rich, you're never going to be able to sort of, like, there's a certain level of removedness and out of touchness that is like impossible to get past once you have a certain amount of money. Yeah. And it's kind of like at that point, what like net good are you able to do with this money, even if you are still like out of touch in the same way? You know, there's like people like Jeff Bezos who are doing like nothing good with the money, and it's completely like going to selfish causes. Yeah. And then there's people who, you know, like Beyonce, who I think are trying to promote valuable things and are standing as sort of like icons of at least specific ideas that are good, even if they're not, even if they are still a billionaire and, you know, flying private jet or whatever.
I think that, you know, just a flag that the hero worship isn't necessarily realistic or healthy. Like, it's like, I don't know. I've seen people be like, oh my gosh, Beyonce's like, she understands, like, I am tired of working. Like, the same thing when Renaissance came out and stuff. But I think it's just like, she can make good music, but that doesn't mean that she's like a prophet, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Let's just be wary of that.
I do feel like she did like come from an upbringing that gives her a little bit more credence in some aspects. Yeah. But no, I agree 100%. I mean, when was the last time that idol worship has gone wrong, you know? My obsession with JK Rowling did not end poorly. My obsession with Kanye West standing up to the test of time. Yeah. Exquisitely.
Taylor Swift is the world's best feminist, like I knew it in 2016,
and queer icon
today. Yeah.
You just need to calm down, everybody. Yeah. That's the solution to everything.
Yeah. Or according to Beyonce, I just pray that we don't crash, we got to keep the faith. Hashtag thoughts and prayers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
what more can we do?
That's what I'm doing, basically. Yeah. That's how I'm living my life. Then we have like this sort of pair of interstitial kind of songs. We have Oh Louisiana, which is like less than a minute, and Desert Eagle, which is also about a minute long.
And this is true of Riverdance too. I think they're all like really pretty, and Oh Louisiana is like cute in its sentiment. but it definitely, you know, it feels like the come down after, you know, the high that is Levi jeans, you know, and all of that. So I think it plays its part. It's like the cool down of your workout, you know?
Well, it sort of settles in, because I think Oh Louisiana and Desert Eagle, yeah, are kind of like the chill exit. And then you have Riverdance, which is like sort of boppy, but not at the same time. It's pretty chill. And then I think you get into the final section of like bangers, which start with Two Hands to Heaven, which I also really love. I also don't know what this song is really about, but I was like, sure, great. And enjoyed it. Did you like this one?
I did. I wrote very pretty in my notes.
And it is very pretty. It's yeah. Also 5 minutes and 41 seconds long. So it is, I believe, the longest song on the album. Yeah. The other thing about Beyoncé that I really like, which I think I struggled with at first, and then as she's progressed and I've gotten more used to it, I've liked it more, in that a lot of her songs, like, they are not following the traditional song format of like verse, chorus, coda, whatever. It's like some of them are kind of like multiple songs that are working, like she'll sort of start with one thing and then move into another thing. The structures are just not always the
it
same.
Kind of can and, sometimes feel like two songs in one.
Right. And so I found myself like on Renaissance, like, I really like the second half of the song, or I really like the first half of the song. So I would sort of like listen to the first half and then restart it, or, you know, like start the song because I like the second half more. And so I think Two Hands to Heaven is kind of like that. It has like some different things going on within it. But once you kind of give into that, and if you're listening to it more in like an album space rather than the individual tracks, it all kind of works, I think.
Yeah.
But it does take some getting used to if you're used to the sort of like traditional format of a song.
Yeah. That's how I felt about Sweet Honey Buckin'.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And that, well, so there's Tyrant, which is the next one, which is also which is sort of like the sex bop of the horniest song of the album.
Wait,
if you will.
Is that what it's about?
I think so. Joking. Oh, I was like,
is that the, how does it go? The like.
Again, I will not be singing on this
podcast.
The
bounce, bounce song.
So Tyrant is like the horny one, and then we get into Sweet Honey Buckin', which is sort of like three different songs, but this is basically a country version of Pure Honey, which is the second to last song on Renaissance, and that also has like a similar structure of like it's multiple songs that are sort of, it's Pure and Honey, which are sort of like put together. And then this is like Sweet and Honey and Buckin', and they're put together. And I really enjoyed this. And it has like similar like soundscapes to Pure Honey. And somebody on TikTok like played the two over top of each other, and they sort of like hit the same like rhythm notes, which I thought is interesting. So I like that this sort of connection. There's a couple of places on the album where I feel like it fits in, where you can see that this is act two of Renaissance. Also, Post Malone like name checks Renaissance in Levi's jeans. The Sweet Honey Buckin' is definitely a callback to Pure Honey, which is one of my favorite songs off Renaissance. So,
well, and she references not winning the AOTY, so
yes, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
Like, on one hand, I do think that Beyoncé obviously wants to win Album of the Year at some point.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely think that is a goal of hers, you know, in the back of her mind. But I also think that at this point, where she is the person with the most Grammys ever, and that she hasn't won that award, and that they have given it to a series of objectively worse albums than hers,
yeah,
that it's almost kind of entertaining and comical, and like Jay-Z brought it up at this year's Grammys in his speech, and then she's, you know, brings it up here. And it's like such a clear depiction of how the Recording Academy is racist.
Yeah.
That I almost think that it doesn't, like, I don't think it stings her in the same way that other artists are upset about not winning things, where they feel like it's like a merit-based kind of thing, or that they've like, that they're being overlooked because of they're not good enough or whatever. Like, I think that Beyonce almost sort of takes it as like a badge of honor at this point of like, I'm so good, and these, and you guys are just so like blatantly racist that you have not given me this award, even though you've given me every other possible thing. And
yeah,
like, yeah, I will be sort of pointing this out to people, and you're gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And then the last track is Amen, which we already sort of talked about in the because it's a goes back into the American Requiem. Do you think that she will win Album of the Year for this?
I mean, I think at this point there has to be sort of just social pressure, even if they don't think it's good. But I do think, given the reviews, it would make sense for this to win. I mean, but I can't say, because the Grammys just always disappoint, you know?
I mean, it's one, or it, the reviews are like incredible on this.
Yeah.
Like, it's got nothing but basically perfect scores from everybody.
I know. So it's like, I would believe it, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they find a way. Like, if Harry Styles just releases another album by surprise or something.
The thing that I think is maybe interesting with that discussion and with the awards discussion in general is that it's a country album, which isn't her traditional genre. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of different genres going on here, as, you know, she talks about at various points. But, like, some of these songs will be submitted in country categories, which are categories that she has not competed in previously, and which she'll be going up against people who are doing very different things than she is. And I kind of, and I guess the Recording Academy voting is so weird, but I wonder if she'll do well in those categories, or if people will sort of push back to the fact that she's there when she's not, you know, quote unquote, a country artist. And then I also wonder if that will trickle into the Album of the Year conversation of like, okay, this is a great album, but like, it's not, you know, it's sort of her like cosplaying as something that, you know, in a field that she's not.
Well, if they like rewarding Taylor Swift for switching genres, then I think, again, it comes back to something else, you know?
Well, no, 100%, obviously. Yeah. But I'm one, like, on one hand, I think, like, okay, yes, yeah, she's so overdue, and it's so obvious, and this album has gotten such incredible praise that, like, there's no way that they couldn't give it to her. But then it's like, I can see how, if you're a racist white person, like, you could come up with new excuses to not give it to her for this one that you couldn't use for things, you know, like Lemonade and whatnot. And how, you know, I mean, I guess there's no sort of like clear competitor yet at this point, but we do have a Taylor Swift album coming out. There's, you know, Maggie Rogers. There's who knows what's coming in the back half of the year.
Taylor and her have never been, or no, we're Fearless and I Am Sasha Fierce against each other, or were they on different Grammy cycles? You know what I mean?
I actually don't know who she was up against necessarily when she lost. Although I Am Sasha Fierce is objectively, and all Beyonce fans know this, Beyonce's worst album. So
yeah, no, that was Taylor's only chance. So it would be shocking if that even was a competition, just because I also don't think the Grammys would reward Taylor Swift 3 years in a row, or 2 years in a row, for a fifth Album of the Year. You know what I mean?
Unless, but the other thing, like, with, right, unless it's incredible. Unless it's like, I mean, but I mean, we've talked about this before, but I sort of feel like that, not that the tide has turned on Taylor Swift, but I feel like there's there's something in the air, and I don't feel like people are going to be going out of their way to praise this album if it's not great. You know what I mean?
I can see that.
Like, I think that there's not the same good, like, Midnights, I think, got perhaps more praise than it deserved because people had a lot of goodwill for Taylor when that came out, where I don't know that extends currently. Would you say?
And it's interesting because everyone thought Taylor would be featured on this album and, in fact, tried to pretend that she was a backing vocal on Bodyguard before they were like, no, she's not. She's not credited, you guys. Calm down.
The various conspiracy theories about who was going to appear on Cowboy Carter were similar to what was going on with Kate Middleton. In like the internet is just deranged. And I guess there are 100 tracks, so it's possible that Taylor Swift could have sang on something and then they just didn't use it. Similarly with the Telephone Part 2 Lady Gaga collab that we're supposedly maybe getting at some point. But yeah, fascinating the different people that they thought were going to be on this. And I guess, like, on one hand, if you had told me, like, if you had given me a list of artists, I would never have suspected that she would have picked Miley Cyrus and Post Malone. Like, those seem like such random selections in comparison to other people who would have made more, like, sense, I guess. But at the same time, I feel like having a song with Taylor Swift on it feels not exactly what Beyonce's trying to do. I don't know.
That feels anti-black, honestly, all the white artists.
Yeah, it's sort of like,
this is too pandering, Beyonce. I don't like that
at all. And
3 years ago,
think
everyone thought Taylor Swift was a Ku Klux Klan member.
Right. Well, yeah. I'm sort of like, what? I mean, I guess, like, what is she trying to say by having Miley Cyrus or Post Malone on the album? But those kind of feel more like moot points of people. You know what I mean? Like they're sort of like a net, like, there's not a net positive or a net negative. They're sort of like celebrities who are unattached to things, but like, I don't know what you would be actively saying by having Taylor Swift on the album. Like what would Beyonce's sort of message be about that, other than like, women are supporting women, you know?
Exactly. Superstars, no beef here. Let's hug it out. Right. Yeah.
And also I feel like probably if Beyonce asked Taylor Swift to be on a track, Taylor Swift would say yes, but she doesn't do a lot of, like, collabs necessarily with people outside of her, like, couple of friends. So I feel like it's not that...
she used to do more, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's not like that surprising.
She's very individualistic.
She's not in this. And as far as the Lady Gaga thing goes, which I'm very invested in, I feel like we always knew, or I at least did, that if we get a Telephone Part 2, which I sort of feel like we will at some point, that it will be on a Lady Gaga album and not on a Beyonce album. Mm. Because Beyonce's albums, at least as of recently, have been so, like, cohesive to themselves that sticking a random Lady Gaga track on there.
Lady Gaga's done country.
Right. Well, yes. Theoretically,
so
yes.
So they could do a country.
But I think Lady Gaga's albums are less, like, you know, there's less of, like, a message necessarily there. So I could easily see Beyonce popping up on Lady
Gaga. Oh, she's making music, right? Is her album going to come out this year?
Unclear, but Rivals. On her birthday, she posted an Instagram caption that was like, I've never been happier. I've never felt healthier. I'm writing music. I'm really proud of it. Also, Joker 2 is coming out soon. I'm doing great in life, which makes me very excited because, you know, she's had a lot of health issues.
It's giving Sydney Sweeney
and things
in Euphoria.
And the last time that she said that she was feeling great and she was really excited about music, we got Art Pop, which I love. So I think that we're gonna get some sort of, like, rock and roll album out of Lady Gaga, because she's been posting a lot of things in, like, leather and
look at
that
you
sort
a little
of
tone
aesthetic.
Predictor. You're, like, reading into outfits. Well, I love it.
Lady Gaga is very, like, fashion forward in her eras, and usually there's, like, a switch in the fashion while she's working on the album before, you know, the album comes out.
Yes.
And so I can't imagine her posting all of the pictures that she's posting and have the album be Chromatica.
Well,
you know?
And she bleached her eyebrows, right?
Yes.
Very.
And she's just been posting a lot of like selfies and sort of like, I don't know, like in, she's like walking around a, like with trees behind her or something. I feel like it's going to be like a, something more like Joanne, but maybe a little bit rockier.
Okay. You heard it here first.
Prediction of what Lady Gaga's next album is. And I love Joanne, so
yeah.
I am more than happy to get another version of that.
Yeah, of course.
Tony Bennett is dead, so I don't think we're getting another jazz album. And really, those are the only ones by her that I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
And I'm also very excited about the Joker 2 soundtrack, which is apparently all covers, but I'm excited to hear Lady Gaga do some covers.
Oh, I just can't believe that we allowed that man to think he made a good enough art piece that he can do a sequel. Like, I just,
the movie's good. Okay, here's what I'll say. Joker 2 gonna be bad. It's gonna be a bad movie. It's not gonna be great. Yeah. Things I'm excited about: one, Lady Gaga's the music, because she's a great singer and whatever covers she does are going to be good. Two, Lady Gaga on the press tour. It's going to be unhinged and absolutely incredible. And I cannot wait to see her talk about her transforming into Harley Quinn.
Yeah,
that's
sure,
going to be amazing. Everything else
involved
with this. Do you
think
it's
going to be like a Moulin Rouge style musical?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I see.
Somebody or another, I read that it's all covers. It's not like original music.
But is it like mashups? You know what I mean? Like Moulin Rouge tells a story through music. It's just not original music.
Yeah, no, I think that's what it is.
Cute. Not. That cute was sarcastic.
So I imagine it's going to be like Bruce Springsteen songs. You know, like I think it's going to be more that energy than like pop music.
I can't believe it.
Sometimes I just think
about how much I hated watching Joker in theaters, and I'm just like...
Well, that's the thing, is that Joker was terrible, but I really can't imagine a version of Joker that has 20, like, musical covers and also Lady Gaga in it. I'm like,
furious.
The tone of this movie has to be completely different.
I don't know. I can picture him thinking he's... Because, again... He thought he was doing... It's whatever. It's fine. I hate Joker. It's fine.
No, I also hate Joker.
I know you do. I know. I'm just saying I have no faith in What's-His-Face. And I can see him thinking, oh, it's really going to like mix things up to take this seriously. Like Moulin Rouge takes it seriously. You know?
I also do not think that this is going to be a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. For sure. I'm mad at him, not you. I agree with you.
And I think Lady Gaga is collateral damage in this project. Just like she was in House of Gucci, where she was incredible and just the rest of...
No, she wasn't. It's fine.
Yes, she was.
It's fine.
The fact that she ad-libbed Father, Son,
and
House
exactly.
of Gucci
yeah.
is genius. Like, that is pop culture. That is creation.
No.
Like... What else from that year is going to be ingrained in my brain until I die more than Father, Son, and House of Gucci?
I don't know.
I almost rewatched that movie on a plane recently.
Stop.
I should.
Stop.
It was great.
You know, I bet Beyonce was going to do a telephone sequel, and then she watched that, and she said, never mind.
Beyonce probably watched House of Gucci as one of the movies that she was, you know, watching while she was creating this album. Which song off of this do we think is based on House of Gucci?
House of Gucci is not a Western, so don't even go pretending
Levi's
that she
jeans,
wasn't
maybe.
Dedicated to the genre. And...
Two Most Wanted. It's Two Most Wanted. It's the lesbian, because there was the lesbian scene between her and Selma Hayek that got cut.
What lesbian
There we go.
Scene?
Beyonce watched House of Gucci. She loved it. She was really obsessed with the Lady Gaga Selma Hayek love plotline.
I mean, Italians.
And then she wrote Two Most Wanted
spaghetti.
Because they were the two most wanted because they went
spaghetti.
To jail for killing the husband.
Spaghetti.
Also that too. Because they're Italian.
Yeah, exactly. You get it.
Wow.
You get
you
it.
Heard it here first, everybody. Yeah. Also Buchan, probably, based on the sex scene in the on-site construction trailer or whatever that was.
Oh yeah, I forgot
a lot
about
of bucking
that.
Going
you
on there
too many close memories of this movie.
It was a great movie.
No. Let's just stop. Okay. Let's just
Al Pacino stop. Signing away the rights to Gucci. Actually, I have to
go. I'm getting another call. So
No, you're not. From is it telephone?
Yeah.
Telephone. Is it from a prison? Calling.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you appreciated this album and got on the Beyoncé train. It was exciting for me to be with you when these songs came out, and then the next morning to just hear you playing them while you were getting ready.
I know. Weren't you proud of me?
Unprompted. I was like, wow, I'm not even the one listening to this. This is
You're like, oh my Shelby. Gosh, I do have an influence on her.
I'm like, it only took me however many years, but I am so excited for when we cover Department of Tortured Lovers in 2 weeks or whenever that album comes out, and I get to ask the question, was this album better or worse than Cowboy Carter? Yeah, and you say Cowboy Carter was better.
Yeah. I'll get some merch made either way, you know. It'll be our Super Bowl.
Perfect. Well, okay, I'm going to go back and just listen to more Cowboy Carter for the rest of however. Yeah. You need to listen to Just for Fun and think about Just for Fun as a cancer anthem.
Okay, because stand up to cancer, Just for Fun.
Stand up to cancer. Yeah. Well, that is where there was also a clip going around that was of Miley Cyrus and Beyonce singing something or another together at the Stand Up for Cancer. And Beyonce had that horrible short haircut that she had for a little bit. I was like, oh, glad we got rid of this.
Don't comment on women's hair. Don't comment on black women's hair. Honestly, Matt. Honestly.
Look, Beyonce has had a lot of different great hairstyles. Yeah. That was not one that suited her well.
That was lower on your list, okay.
And also, she was wearing one of those, like, 2000s shirt, you know, like, the t-shirts that were, like, the women fit or whatever that, like, came down and covered your butt. It was just a bad look.
Stand up to cancer.
Like, do you know what I'm talking about? I don't know what that style is.
Yeah. Iconic.
But a bad style of fashion and also not great hair on Beyonce.
Okay. Well, that concludes our Beyonce episode, I guess.
Yes. When does the Taylor Swift album come out?
Also 29th?
April? Oh, okay. So we have a few weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have to drudge up some movie.
I mean, it is weird that she's been off tour for like 3 weeks now and hasn't done any sort of promotional stuff. So,
well, she was too busy walking around with an obese, gross-looking man with a disgusting dad bod. Ew,
that is body shaming. That is not nice.
No, I was being satirical because that's what the internet was saying, and then everyone was like, "This is a dad bod. Like, this person is so fit." That's you weren't ridiculous. Following that side of the controversy?
No, I wasn't. I'm
really?
I know. I'm sorry. I've been off the radar. Gosh. I mean, I saw that she was at Nobu, but I didn't see any discourse beyond that.
No, so she was, these pictures were taken of like her and him at a beach somewhere, and he's like, you know, doesn't have a shirt on. And people were like, headlines and stuff were like, Travis Kelce rocks a dad bod, blah, 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 blah. And people were like, he's a professional athlete. Like, he's massive. He has huge, like, in what world is this a dad bod? Yeah, like, this is ridiculous. Like, if this, and then there were all of these articles that were about, like, the Marvelication of bodies and how, like, the only, like,
I missed a whole discourse.
Yes.
That's crazy. Oh,
and how, like, and then they were showing pictures of, like, you know, famous actors in the 70s and 80s or whatever who were shirtless and looked like, you know, like normal looking people. And now how everybody has these like steroidy, like physical trainer, you know, airbrushed
bodies and how ridiculous those are.
What?
Were they coming after my boy, Zac Efron?
I don't think so. I mean,
so you look, you steroids. It's okay.
Zac Efron is a different, I don't think anybody. Zac Efron, I think, is maybe the opposite direction where people are like, you've done too much. You know, I don't think people are looking at him and going, wow, that's the body that I want.
It's a little scary. We shouldn't be commenting on people's bodies.
Look, everybody have the body that you want to have. All bodies are beautiful. I'm just commenting on the people who are commenting on the bodies.
Right. Okay, well, thank you for bringing this to my attention. I'm glad I got the summary from you.
But yes, if you want to go look at the pictures of Travis Kelce's quote unquote dad bod. Yeah. You can go find those online where it's not a dad bod at all. It is a professional football player's massive, like, rock slab of a body.
Yeah. They're probably just used to seeing Taylor with these scrawny little sickly English orphans, you know?
Yeah, like Matty Healy.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if there'll be a song about him on the new Tortured Tortured Poets.
I'm 100% sure.
Well, we'll be back next week. Unclear on what, based on what I can see with my cancer schedule. Yeah. I am going to try to go to a Challengers screening because I need to write a review for that. So we'll see how that goes. But that also doesn't come out for a couple weeks. Mm.
So maybe I should try to go to a Challengers screening.
You could.
You got to send me your email templates.
Send some emails. I don't know if... Well, I was going to say, I don't know if they're doing screenings in Texas, but you don't live in Texas. You live in California. They're definitely doing screenings.
I'm in LA, baby.
This ain't Texas. Pasadena.
In Pasadena, with my orange trees in the backyard.
Pasadena, baby.
Country life.
I can't wait to come visit you again.
I know. You've got to. The weather's great today.
Okay. Well, this episode is very long.
It's the length of Beyonce's album.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Somehow longer, actually. We've had more to say than she has, which is how it should be, because we as Black artists are here explain what is going on. No. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Probably unclear what we're talking about, but you know, that's just where we are at this point. Yes. Thank you. Bye.